You're listening to another top-rated radio show on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Welcome to the American Hour with your host, Commander Tom Garcia, on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Commander Tom, and you're listening to the American Hour. Welcome this fine Monday. Let's see, what is this? This is Wednesday. Yeah, I got to know what day it is because I'm actually going to be flying tonight. But we are assisted, as usual, by our lovely co-host, Paula Lozon-Osman. Good afternoon, Paula.
Good afternoon, Tom. How are you?
Good. Any soccer? You been to any soccer games since Monday?
No, just practice is what he's got for the rest of the week. The real stuff starts next week.
Okay. All right. I hear a dog in the background.
That's okay. Our mascot.
Well, he's excited about the soccer too. We can tell. Very cool. And we're also joined today by Dick Berenbach, our good friend. How are you today, Dick?
Doing good, Tom. How are you?
Excellent, excellent. I just got back from Maine last night, and of course I'm heading out tonight to Brazil. But I'll be back Saturday morning, and of course we'll be broadcasting live from sunny Florida, South Florida, as well as Boston on Monday. We don't have a guest lined up, but that's okay. There's a lot of events going on, a lot of things to talk about. We got a big presidential race coming up and lots of important races around the country. And we just see two Republicans taking Democrat seats. The biggest one, of course, was New York here. Anthony's Weiner seat got taken today by a Republican. And that's great news, I guess, actually yesterday. And the Democrats are shrugging that off as, oh, no big deal. Well, of course, Debbie What's-Her-Next-Lie Schultz has been laying low. And she's come out with a few things lately, but the biggest one was her saying that it's kind of a tough seat for Democrats to win. It's like, you got to be kidding me. A tough seat for Democrats to win? It's a 3-to-1 ratio of Democrats in that district, heavily, heavily Democrat population. And Democrats voted for the Republican, not so much because of who he is or what he stands for, but they're disgusted with the Democrat Party. And they've been coming out saying that. Voters have been saying that. So when they say, oh, this is not really a referendum on this upcoming presidential race with Obama, it absolutely is a referendum. It absolutely is. Now, I guarantee you that the Democrats, especially somebody like Debbie What's-Her-Next-Lie Schultz, if the Democrat had won, it would have been a referendum on the president and his administration. Absolutely would have been a referendum because they've already done that in past elections where a Republican maybe should have won in that particular race and didn't. It has always been a referendum on what a great job the president is doing. But in this case, nope, no referendum at all. So it's only a referendum if a Democrat wins. If a Democrat loses, no referendum. This is the hypocrisy we're going to see and the kind of lies out of Debbie and her party for the next for the rest of the election cycle. It's going to be lie, lie, lie. And as our good friend Michael Cutler, who broadcasts on this station on Fridays at 4 p.m., and he may be going to 7, always says, if at first you don't succeed, lie, lie again. And that describes the Democrat Party. And what's interesting about, well, I won't say he says that about the Democrat Party because he's a Democrat. It's what he says about this administration. So in any case, we've got a special guest that's going to call in today, Margie Patchett, and she's running for Volusia County Commissioner at large, and that's in Volusia County,
no,
Florida.
No, she's not. That was the last time, Tom.
Oh, I thought she was running again. Well,
no, not that I'm aware of, unless I haven't been keeping up on her.
We will ask her when she gets on the show. But yeah, one of the things that we were going to talk about.
Line.
She's on the line? Okay. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to bring Margie on. And then after that, we're going to talk about something that I advertised for the show, and that was Marco Rubio's letter to Arne Duncan, the Secretary of the Department of Education, about the violations of her department as well as the executive branch when it comes to No Child Left Behind and some other things that they have been pushing that are unconstitutional. And Marco has essentially asked them, please give me a response on how this is possibly constitutional and not a violation of the law as well. So we'll get into that after a few minutes. But Margie, it's great to have you on the show. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great, Tom. Thanks for having me. And hi, Dick. How are you?
Hello, Margie. Great to hear from you again.
Thanks. Thanks for having me on the show.
Well, this is a real pleasure, and we tried to schedule it before, but it's tough. It's been tough getting guests on at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, so we've moved to 7 p.m. We're going to try that for a while and see how this works out. But in any case, the first question we have for you is, are you running for office again?
Wow, that's a really good question. Rumor is I'm running for every seat that's out there. So that's a rumor, and it was really ironic because one day I was driving down the road and I was listening, of course, to a radio talk show, and they announced that I was running for Ann McFall's seat here in Volusia County, the Division of Elections.
Oh boy!
So I slammed on my brakes. I'm like, well, that's different.
Yeah, at least it's a new rumor.
Ask her.
Yeah. It pays really good, but anyway, no. I am considering running. I just haven't. I'm waiting to see where the redistricting and where all the chips end up falling. Can I say?
Okay.
So, but yes, I am considering
okay.
it.
Now,
Margie,
if you're going to
tell
run,
me what?
Go ahead, Dick.
Margie, tell me what you think of the story that I sent you.
I had heard that one of our council members was at the Tea Party Express on Sunday. I was trying to make that, but my schedule with my husband and stuff, it kind of conflicted, but we weren't able to make that, unfortunately. But I didn't know she supported the Tea Party. She's a Democrat, isn't she?
Yes, she is.
And I had heard through the grapevine, I got several emails on that, not about the story you mentioned to me, but that she had, you know, showed up at the Tea Party Express. So I guess the Tea Party does cross all lines, and we're starting to get Democrats involved. We ought to, you know, maybe start inviting her to be the speaker and ask her opinion on Agenda 21.
Well, you know what's interesting is, yeah, that the Democrats are realizing they need something like the Tea Party, and they've tried forming Tea Party-like groups themselves, but they can't, and there's a reason why. These Tea Party groups sprang up on their own, but the Democrats are trying to create them. The leadership is trying to create them, and it just doesn't work that way, so they're failing at that, and that just goes to show the apathy within their own party and the lack of desire to really push forward this liberal agenda. So maybe they're thinking, maybe we better just kind of join in with the Tea Party a little bit and kind of confuse things, or maybe get some support from the Tea Party if we're moderate enough. Yeah, that's very interesting.
And you know, Tom, you can't duplicate the passion and the frustration that is out there unless they are really passionate and really frustrated. And that's why they can't duplicate it. You know, when people start to realize, and the Tea Party group is part of it, when they start to realize that their voice does actually make a difference, because we've been told, as long as I've been alive, that, oh, you can't make a difference, you can't make a difference. And in 2006, when I rallied 600 people to our county council chambers, and we pressured our county council to go to the rollback rate that year, which was unprecedented, the only county in the entire state, taxing entity in the entire state that did that year, when people finally realize that their voice does make a difference, that empowers the people. And we have to wake up. I'm glad people are finally waking up, but, you know, we need a lot more people to wake up and get involved because, you know, we're focused up in D.C. and stuff like that, which is great because D.C., you know, our whole government system is broken. It is so broken, and it's great we're focusing up on D.C., but governments run amok in our own backyards, and we keep reelecting the same people to the local offices. You know, at our county council last year, you know, the seat I was running for was basically an open seat. The council member was termed out, and that was the only new face, but I was up against a long-term politician. I was up against the establishment and the unions. And I lost by only 5%, which was really good for my first time out on a county-wide race. But no other faces, no other faces changed at the county level. They kept re-electing the same people. That's got to stop.
You know, that's a really important point. That's why we wanted to have you on to talk about some of the reasons that you got in the race. Why specifically? To try and alert people out there. They may not live in Volusia County listening today. They may live in California. You need to pay attention to your county, local, and even state representatives. And this is one of the biggest things. I tell people this all the time, and I've said it on the show, but the biggest single thing I learned running for Congress was that at the state, county, and local levels, we are being screwed by these politicians that have been elected because we tend to not pay attention to that. Most average citizen out there can't tell you who their state legislator is or state senator is, let alone county commissioner. And that's
or
exactly
own
what
mayor,
people...
Or yeah. The own mayor of their own city. You know, and that's where right. Governments run amok. And, you know, I formed Volusia Tax Reform in 2006. And we were the only tax reform movement organized in the state of Florida. I thought the chamber, the home builders, the board of realtors would come out and protest this broken tax system we have in Florida, but nobody did. And because we were the only organized effort, man, we went statewide. I worked with Speaker Marco Rubio, well, with Senator Marco Rubio now, but when he was Speaker of the House, I took 17 buses, organized 17 buses across the state of Florida, and we marched on Tallahassee for tax reform. It didn't pass, and I've done. You can go to our website at VolusiaTaxReform.com and see the many things we've done over the years. But the most important thing is we have formed budget study groups of volunteer citizens. We have studied our local city, county, school board budgets and our other taxing district budgets. And as the saying goes, if you follow the money, you find the corruption. And that's what we found. And what they're not passing up in D.C., like your local cap and trade, and things like that, they are doing it rampant at the local levels. It's out of control, and people need to wake up and realize that.
Yeah, it is
and
amazing.
Go ahead,
Dick.
Margie, what do you think about the discussions about abolishing real estate taxes?
Yes, we're holding a town hall meeting on September 29th in Holly Hill at 6:30 p.m. We have been pushing for this. We realized several years ago when we worked with Marco Rubio he went to try to abolish property taxes. And, of course, there was not the political will to do that. But the momentum for that, the support of that, was tremendous. It was off the charts. The polling for that was off the charts back in 07, 08. And we have a representative now, Charles Van Zandt, who has asked us to join with him in drafting a bill in Tallahassee this legislative session to abolish property taxes in the state of Florida. Our system here in Florida is broken because we have Save Our Homes, and it's a very complicated issue. But basically what it does, it shifts the tax burden to new homeowners and our businesses. Our businesses are being decimated. For example, my neighbor right across the street from me pays about $1,200 a year in property taxes right now. My husband and I, we pay $3,300. And my next-door neighbor, because it's his second home, pays almost $6,000 in property taxes. And he's the one that's never here and doesn't use the services. The tax system is broken, and the more exemptions we keep adding to the tax base, the more inequitable and more unfair it becomes. And so we figured we will never vote out Save Our Homes. That has to be by a vote of the citizens. That will never happen. So the only other way to fix it is to abolish the tax system altogether.
What surprises me or discourages me or whatever, that real estate taxes are based in part on the value of your home.
Right.
My house increased greatly for a little while, and my taxes increased with it. But
yeah.
Now that the price of my house has dropped down, my taxes haven't. They've gone
right.
Higher.
Your taxes are probably still increasing, and that's because it really shouldn't matter what your assessed value of your house is. We have a spending problem with our local governments. During the boom years, they doubled and tripled and quadrupled their budgets. They say that they didn't increase taxes because they didn't increase the millage rate. But because the values doubled and tripled and quadrupled and they left the millage rate alone, the money they got in was double and triple. And that's why it's so broken. It's decimated our economy. Florida was always the last one to get into a recession and the first one to get out. But because of our broken property tax system here in Florida, we were the first one to get into this recession. And if something isn't drastically done, we will be the last one to get out of it. Now, what we're planning on doing, now people are going to say, well, how's government going to get their money? How are we going to pay for our police and fire and so forth? Well, people must realize that the property taxes are only about 15 to 20% of a government's entire budget. They get money from every place, from your water bills, from franchise fees. Look at your cell phone bill and see how much you pay to your local city just for having a cell phone and living in that city. That's where most of, about 80, 75 to 80% of their money comes from. And if we abolish all property taxes in the state of Florida, we would only have to increase the sales tax about 2.5 cents. And that's it.
Wow. I'm all for that.
Yes. Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, yes. But some people will say that sales tax is regressive and hurts the poor. But no, if you leave the exemptions alone, food and medicine and so forth would still be exempt. And if you leave that alone, it's not, you know, it may hurt the poor if they're going to go buy beer and cigarettes, you know.
Yeah.
But the boom, our economy would boom in the state of Florida, and that's what's going to take us out of the depression that we are in.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the things you have to look at is the poor get to utilize the same services that the rich do, and in some cases utilize them more. I'm not suggesting that the poor aren't paying their fair share, but there are many people that are getting away with, taking. Well, let me give you an example. A friend of mine who wrote the book "The Cure to the Health the American Healthcare Malady." One of the things that he pointed out in his book, and this is really focused on healthcare, but I think it goes to the same sort of story here with the sales tax, is he said back in the day when retirees and dependents, et cetera, could come on base and utilize the healthcare services there, which were free. You didn't pay a copayment or anything like that. It was just completely free. And I remember those days growing up in an Air Force family and then later on being in the Navy. Now this is the doctor's perspective. There were a lot of people that would come in for anything. Oh, I got a little ache in my back. Oh, I sneezed today. Maybe I'm coming down with when you suddenly say to them, no, you can't use the dispensary on base anymore, you've got to start using a system called TRICARE, so basically a commercialized sort of medical system, just like any other healthcare plan, really. All of a sudden, when you have to have a little ache in your back, you take some Advil. You don't go see a doctor because you got to pay the doctor $20 to see him, and he's going to tell you take an Advil. You know, you sneeze, you go, well, I don't know, maybe I'm coming down with something, but until I really feel it, I'm not going to go see the doctor. And even then, I'll just go buy some cold medication. So all of a sudden, you've gotten rid of it. But that's just the point I'm making. When there are a lot of services that are free to the poor, and I'm not against those services, but they tend to, in some cases, abuse those services, and doctors will tell you that, whether they're Medicaid recipients, et cetera, will tell you that people are coming in for anything and everything that you and I would never go in to see a doctor for.
That's exactly right. And, you know, like I said, our whole system's broken. And we have in Florida what we call hospital taxing districts. There's only 16 of them in the state of Florida because they're archaic and should be abolished. And we're fortunate enough, and I say that facetiously, but we're fortunate enough to have three of those here in our county. We have Burt Fish, Halifax Hospital, and West Volusia. And what you see happening, and the hospitals will truly admit it, we've studied these budgets as well, is that you have your indigent care going in there for colds, for back pain, for this, for the flu, when they really should be seeing doctors. And I don't know the percentage, but I'm not really sure the percentage of the emergency room visits that are things like that, but I want to say it's pushing like 70%. And my daughter is also a registered nurse at one of the other private hospitals here. She's in charge of the cardiac cath unit. But we have hospital taxing districts. For example, Halifax Hospital here. they tax the citizen basically from Ormond Beach down to Port Orange, where I live. And we're a huge county because we have three taxing districts. Now, in 2003, the property taxes they collected was about $23 million or so. But from 2003 to 2006, that increased to $55 million, what they put on the backs of property owners. And they have about a billion dollar budget. Now, we've held their feet to the fire. They're down around $26 million now in property taxes again. But they're saying if they get rid of property taxes, guess what? They're going to have to close, you know, their certain units in their hospital. That, I mean, we're not even talking 10% of their total budget is reliant on property taxes. But the whole system's broken. The whole healthcare system is. And I think, like you said, Tom, that when we know what the cost of our healthcare cost is, then we won't pay it. I won't say how old I am, but golly, when I was 18 and when I was first married, we had health insurance where we'd have to go in and pay the doctor, but then the insurance would reimburse us 80%. Okay, but we had to pay up front. That we went to doctors, we would kind of shop around because if we had to pay $100 at one doctor and $50 at one doctor, well, I might go to the $50 doctor,
Because
we knew the cost of it. And thanks to Hillary and Hillary Care, that changed the entire scope of health care.
Yeah. Well, now, Margie, where can people go to find out more about what you and your organization are doing so that they can look at their own local and state officials and question them on some of these same subjects and see if the same kind of thing's going on? Do you have a website?
Yeah, we have two websites. We have VolusiaTaxReform.com, and that's VOLUSIA, TaxReform.com. And what happened in 2009, I quit my job and went because I had an opportunity to go around the state of Florida, and I formed what's called LowerTaxesNow.org. That's another website. And I went around the state of Florida in 2009 and 2010, teaching citizens how to review their budgets. Through our budget study groups, we have developed a program, and I will go and teach citizens anywhere in the state of Florida on how to use this program. We'll give it to them free of charge. There's no charge for this. It's all free out of my own pocket. And we have a program. We'll teach you how to get the information, and it automatically creates charts and everything in PowerPoint presentations so that you can see where your local money is being spent and how much it's increased or decreased over the years.
Well, that's awesome. That is absolutely awesome, and people really need to take a look at that. I encourage people every time I'm speaking somewhere and we're talking about this kind of subject to get involved at the local level. It's easy to look at the federal level, as you said at the beginning of the show, and pay attention. It's harder to get involved, but it's really quite easy to get involved at the local level. Well, give us an example of something. If somebody's in, say, Oklahoma right now or even New Jersey or wherever, and what would you suggest they do, the first step that they do, the first meeting, whether it be a county or city council meeting to go to, and what would be the first thing they should look for to see if there's some corruption going on?
Well, what they need to do is start going to your local city or school board or county council meetings, and I guarantee you it's better than any comedy show you will ever see on TV, because it really is. It would be hilarious if it wasn't so serious. But when you see how your government's run, over the years I've seen people get so frustrated and angry that they give up. But I get more determined. The more angry I get, the more determined I get, because I don't give up. If they want, start looking at their budgets. The budgets, even CPAs can't understand their way they do their budgets. But we have hooked up with former city managers through the state and some CPAs that actually audit these budgets of the government, and they have showed us how to look at these budgets and where to find the money. And it's appalling. I mean, look at what happened in the city in California. If you heard about that, this one of the poorest cities in the state of California, where I think the average salary was, $29,000, their elected officials were making $800,000 a year. And it's my understanding, the last I read, those elected officials are being charged for abuse of taxpayer dollars. It's appalling what you find. And you know, you had mentioned when I was on the phone holding about, you know, Marco Rubio's letter and stuff like that, about it's illegal. You know, how can our government do stuff that's illegal? Well, duh, they are doing stuff that's illegal. We have found it here in our own county and in our cities. And there's just a couple ways to stop it. Either you file a lawsuit. Well, not a lot of people want to file a lawsuit, okay? You file a lawsuit to stop it. Either you go to your state attorney or to the attorney general of your state. But guess what, folks? They're also elected officials. And they get donations from some of the people that are aiding with these illegal activities our government is doing. So, you know, sometimes you got to go to the FBI on matters like this. So, but the thing is, they can contact us. I can email them our program that we have and show them some of the things that we've done. You can email me through the websites, and I'd be glad, more than glad, to try to show you how to do it. But it can be very complicated. But start attending. And the most important thing is you must be professional in your approach to the local governments, because they're used to very passionate people coming up before them, probably the same people over and over again, and they tend to get ignored because maybe they're a bit too passionate or maybe perhaps too fanatical. And so, you know, they call them crazies or they don't know what they're talking about. And even if you're professional in your approach, they'll say that. But what we have discovered is most of your local elected officials are not professional. So they don't know how to handle it when a group of professional people come before them and start questioning stuff. They can't handle it.
Yeah, exactly.
Talking about mismanagement of money, at least one case I'm aware of in Volusia County, in this land grab, the county council went and took money from a place they were not supposed to take money from and used it to buy land.
That is one of the things we've been doing for several years, researching, and it's been going on, you know, for decades, actually, but we discovered this about 3 years ago. And it has to do, in Florida here, we have what's called the Forever Program, and it has to deal with Agenda 21. Now, Agenda 21 is the program with the UN and the federal government that basically what they try to do is get your local governments to start purchasing properties. And basically what they want to do is move them to the cities and create urban areas. And the main reason for that is property values would increase because there will be only so much land that can be built upon, so much land in demand, and therefore the values will increase. And then guess what? The taxes will increase, which means more money for the government. but what we have found, we have a forever program in the state of Florida that your cities, your counties, the state, and our other taxing districts can either jointly or separately start purchasing property for what they call conservation. Now, through our budgets, actually, we developed a hotline number, an anonymous hotline number for government employees to contact us, and this is where we discovered this. An employee gave us this information, and this is just one of at least a dozen properties that this has happened to here in our county. And just one example, but it's happened at least a dozen times. Now, we had these three properties that were valued by our property appraiser for the past 20, 25 years. The total value of those three properties were $77,500. Now, in 2004, those parcels went on the forever wish list. The government wanted to purchase those properties. So guess what happened? Our property appraiser increased those values that had been valued at $77,500 for the past 20, 25 years and owned by the same people for that amount of time. He increased them from $77,500 to $1.6 million. And it was purchased in 2007 for $1.6 million. We did not have beachfront properties increasing in value that amount of money during the boom years. And remember, this recession started here in 2006 in Florida. Now, what happened was the Forever Program is designed to develop property that is in danger of being developed and to conserve those properties. These parcels are wetlands. They are inaccessible. They were never in danger of being developed. If the property owners could have developed them, they would have and made tens of millions of dollars. And they based, the county based their purchase. They got three appraisals on the property, one for $500,000, one for $700,000, and the last one that they went with was $1.5, $1.6 million. But it says clearly in the appraisal that this is a hypothetical appraisal. If you had access to the property, if it didn't have wetlands, and if you could develop it, then it would be worth $1.6 million. And that's what we purchased it for. And we had our local news people do a story on it, and, you know, we've really delved into it. And, I mean, if you want me to go on more about it, I could tell you more.
I have noticed that an awful lot of politicians use words, and when you hear them, you should really pay attention. Your antenna should go up. It could be, it's possible, this might happen. Things like this. It means that they're guessing, they don't know what's going on, and they're throwing something out there to scare you.
Yes, of course. Oh, they scare us. They call us crazies, even though we are professionals, and we use their figures. We use their audited figures. And then they tell us, you know, I mean, even our county chair had the audacity to tell us that it wasn't because we had 600 people show up at the county council meeting that they went to the rollback rate, that they were planning that. That was a bunch of malarkey. I mean, they twist things. It's, you know, the Saul Alinsky rules for radicals. Who are you going to believe, mm-hmm. me or your lying eyes? You know? And you got to be prepared for that. You know, and over the years, I mean, my husband and I, we've been threatened. We've had our trash stolen. We've had our phone tapped. We've had members get their tires slashed, you know. But we're still in the game. We're not going to give up because, you know, I have a granddaughter. I have two grandchildren, two beautiful granddaughters. And you know what? My two children are grown. And in 20, 30 years from now, when they ask me, Grandma, why did you allow this to happen? I'm going to hand them books and books of the things I've done and say, this is what your grandma did to try to save our country. Because, and it all starts at the local levels. The corruption is rampant at the local levels, and you work your way up. Instead of working from the top down, it's bottom up. Not top right. down, it's bottom up.
I agree with that.
I have noticed that, this is going on all over the country. This is not something unique to Volusia County or to Florida. This is happening all over our country, and people are not looking at it. They're not seeing it. And it's really amazing that you send them information, and they say, well, are you sure this is happening? I'm sorry. Open your eyes. Open your ears.
And that's true. Some people don't want to believe it. Some people don't want to get involved. And, you know, sometimes you just got to wipe the dirt beneath your feet and move on. You know, what's the Bible say? Don't throw your pearls before swine because some people are never going to believe you. That's what that means. If you can't convince them, then just move on. And
right.
that's what's happened in our country. You know, it's all of our fault. We're at the crisis in our country today because we've been apathetic. We all were. We all have been. You know, it's all of our fault we're here today. And thank God people are right. Yeah, thank God people are rising up. The only ones we can blame are ourselves, but we keep reelecting the same people. Now, in New York, thank God last night they didn't do that. Thank God they didn't do it. But at the local levels, you know, here in Florida, we elected a lot of new people at our state and also up in D.C., which is wonderful. I say kudos, kudos, kudos. But look at your local levels, guys. Nobody's changing hands there.
I would like to point something out about that New York election. Tom talked about it just before you got on. Obama's saying it's not a big deal. The ratio in that area is 3-1, 3 Democrats for every 1 Republican. A Republican has not won that seat in nearly 100 years.
I know. I know. That's exactly right.
So yeah. Obama has an awful lot to worry about. His hair is going to get
worse. Oh, he sure does. And Obama, you know, I heard you say, too, that, you know, the Democrats, if they won, they would have said it was a big deal. But since they lost, it was no big deal. It's a heck of a big deal. And when I was campaigning, I had support from Democrats, Republicans, Independents. My message crossed all boundaries because it's a conservative message. Most people are fiscally conservative, and they want our government to be fiscally conservative. And when I was running for office, I was invited several times to some of our Jewish temples. And at one of the events, one of these rabbis got up, and I loved it. He got up. He thought he was going to be booed, he told me, but he got a standing ovation. He spoke before the pulpit, and he started saying, he said that there are several questions that are age old that no one knows the answer to. And he says, the one of them is, we Jews, why do we live as Republicans but vote Democrat? And he got a standing ovation for that. And it's true. It's very, very true. I don't know, I've known Democrats. I used to be, years and years ago, I've always voted for the person, always. But I was a registered Democrat for a while, but I've heard a lot of Democrats say, I haven't left the Democratic Party, they left me, which I think is very true. They've gotten so left, so liberal.
Yep. Well, listen, Margie, thanks for joining us today. It's been very enlightening. And again, the two websites that people can check out to find out more information on how to, utilize the same techniques that you have developed over the years to analyze and look at our local government.
Sure. It's VolusiaTaxReform.com, and that's V-O-L-U-S-I-A, TaxReform.com, or LowerTaxesNow.com. .org. And, email me. I do respond to emails. It may take a day or two, but I do respond. And we're willing to help, guys. And we don't charge anything. It's free. We do all this voluntarily. And, we'll give you our programs, and we'll teach you how to review your local city and county budgets.
That's awesome. Well, you are a true patriot, Margie. Thank you for coming on the show today. We'll have you back, and definitely if you do run for one of the offices and announce sometime in the near future, we'll absolutely have to have you back on to talk more about this and your campaign, et cetera. So in any case, thanks for joining us and enlightening us, always enlightening. I've listened to you speak numerous times in the past at various functions when you were running for office, and you're a wealth of information. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye, Margie.
All right. Yeah, what a patriot, Dick. Thanks for arranging that. I know we had a tough time getting her on before, and you can see she's a busy person. Not only is she a real estate agent, she's got a lot on her plate as she continues to work to educate people and fight local government as they continue to abuse us, the people who they're supposed to be representing and taking care of. So, in any case, well, let's talk about that Marco Rubio letter. I think we've all read it. And there are some real highlights in here. Here's basically what Marco said to the Secretary of Education. He said that you're granting waivers, and you're allowed to grant waivers, but now you're granting waivers to schools that are willing to adopt certain Obama administration policies. So in other words, they're pushing legislation, a form of legislation via these waivers, and if people sort of dangling that out there, it's like going fishing and putting a nice big fat worm on there, and that's illegal to do that. You can grant a waiver where a waiver is warranted by the waiver process, but now they're attaching, we'll only give you this waiver if you do this. And that's absolutely illegal, unconstitutional, violates the executive order process, which is very, very limited in scope. And then he goes on to say, I'm also concerned that by doing this, you're also pushing, I think it's called Common Core Standards, that via contractors and people that you've hired to create curriculum and books, and this is what you're telling them, they must adopt certain curriculum and books and for their education, that you are violating three laws. So not only the Constitution by attaching these requirements to the waivers, but then the requirements themselves violate three separate laws on education. You know, did you guys see anything else in that letter from Marco that stood out from what I just described?
I think you pretty much covered it. He did a real good job in writing that letter.
Quite nice, and I'm quite proud to be represented in the state of Florida by Marco Rubio. And I remember when he was in his early campaign days against Charlie Crist, they weren't giving him a chance at all in winning. And I went to one of his first, fundraisers at just a person's house. And I had seen him speak before at a group that we used to have in South Florida called the, South Florida Latin America Republican Club or some such thing like that. It was essentially a club for anybody that wanted to join, but it was centered on Republicans and conservatism of Hispanic heritage. And right. He came and spoke at a I don't think he had announced yet, but we knew because several of us in the group actually knew Marco fairly well, and I'm not saying that I did. I knew him casually, but knew him quite well. And knew that that's where he was headed, and so we invited him to come speak to the group. And also Tito the Builder, Tito Munoz, you can find him on the internet. I think he's actually running for a position now in Virginia. He's a great speaker. He's also of Cuban, I think he's Cuban descent, but he has a story similar to Marco's, except it's him himself coming from Cuba, and he'll tell you what it was like living in Cuba under a socialistic, communistic dictatorship regime. It's not pleasant.
Yes.
And when you look at the tactics that you see this administration employing, and what Democrats will say is, oh, but everybody does that. No. There's quite a big difference between the tactics. The hypocrisy, the lies, and deception that this administration has been utilizing. They're using the Alinsky tactics, which really are the basis of forming a socialistic / dictatorship type government. And that's what Alinsky was all about, destroying the middle class. And that's precisely what countries like Cuba and Venezuela and on have done. They destroy the middle class. You don't want a strong middle class. And even though people can say, well, the middle class has declined, it's because of the left. Their goal is to destroy the middle class. It's not free market, free market system and capitalism that is destroying the middle class. That builds the middle class up, and it did for quite some time, for at least 100 years in this country, and we've been slowly eroding that via the socialistic and welfare system that our government has been adopting over the last 100 years. So, in any case, Marco, quite proud to be represented by him, and he does give a great speech and is quite a thoughtful person, well-informed. And let's see, what else can I say about
Marco? What he was talking about in that, what Marco was talking about in that letter is true, but it isn't the first time the government's pulled that. If you go back a number of years, the federal government ordered the states to drop their speed limits to 50, or they wouldn't give them any highway tax dollars.
Yeah, and this is exactly why the proponents of states' rights want the federal government to shrink and get out of the business of hijacking and bribing and blackmailing the states with money. If you leave the money in the state to begin with, the states will decide how to manage it. Some states will do better than others. But right now, we're reaching the point where the federal government is really just controlling everything, and the states have very little say. Now, I do want to say this about – go ahead, Dick.
When our freeway system was built, the federal government built it under Eisenhower, and once it was completed, it was to be turned over to the states to maintain it, which it was. What I don't understand is why do any road use taxes go to the federal government? It should stay within the state.
Yeah. Let the states maintain the roads, and let the states
collect
money, but it's not going on, and it's just another way that the federal government can control the states. Absolutely, absolutely. Was it wrong? A lot of people would say that what Eisenhower did was for national security purposes, and to some degree, that's true. Whatever the reason, it's a little bit of a stretch to say that this was for the general welfare, but I guess you could say that. So to tax Americans to pay for this interstate highway system, okay, now it's in place. Now is it up to the federal government to maintain that? And the other thing is, the money that the stimulus supposedly was going to go to create jobs and stimulate the economy, the road work, bridges, and on, all this infrastructure talk, the federal government's not responsible for any of that. It's the states are responsible for that. Now, if you're trying to stimulate the economy, that's one thing, but they make it sound like it's the responsibility of the federal government to maintain all of our bridges and roads all over the country. And if they're falling apart, it's because the states have let them fall apart. It's not because it's the federal government's job to maintain them. So, but they want to tax us to do that. They want to print money to do that because it's going to help the economy. Well, that's never been proven to actually work. And it rarely works. I mean, it works to some degree, but not to the degree that this administration wants it to work. They badly want it. Well, you know, think about this. And let's talk about the Shark Tank. Our friend Javier Manjarres put this out, I believe, in the last day or so. So go look up the Shark Tank on the internet. He was responding to Debbie What's-Her-Next-Lai Schultz's article and letter that he received from her on the jobs, President's jobs proposal. And he said, during his first 2 years, he has had the ability with a Democrat Congress and Democrat Senate to get all kinds of things done that he and his administration, the Democrats, said would turn the country around. Just like Reagan turned the country around in 2 years, in his first 2 years, Obama was going to do that, except he wasn't going to take the path that Reagan took. He's going to take a different path, get us further into debt, and create these phony jobs programs. He's rehashing everything he proposed in his first stimulus plan, and that didn't work. Why is it suddenly going to work now? You know, why did these brilliant geniuses promise us that this would turn around in a couple years, and then it didn't? Well, it's always somebody's fault, and unforeseen, you know, tragedies around the world and on and on. They've got an excuse for everything. I've never seen a bigger bunch of so-called leadership making excuses on and on and on. The real reason is not any of the excuses they give us. The real reason is, simply put, they have failed us, they have used the wrong techniques, and now they're going to try and rehash them again. What will happen is we'll get a little temporary bump, things will get a little bit better, and that's all he needs to get him to the election. That's all he cares about. He doesn't care about creating jobs. He doesn't care about the economy. He doesn't care about people having health care and on. I mean, we know that health care costs have gone up. We know that more Americans lack health care than before his health care plan was passed. And so he's been an utter failure, an absolute utter failure. So read Javier's article on the Shark Tank about that, his letters from Debbie, what's-her-next-by Schultz. Of course, he used her real name. I refuse to use her name. And, of course, we refuse to play any more sound clips of her because it was so painful. I think my ears were bleeding the last time, the only time we did it. And I know Paula had never heard her speak before, and Paula, off air, asked me, can we not ever play a sound clip of her again? So we're just not going to do that. But we'll certainly talk about her lies. And very nice. Yeah, go ahead.
You're going to love the show on the 21st. I have a lady by the name of Rose Bailey set up, and she's going to talk about the Monsanto seed game that they're playing, how they're messing with our food supply.
Okay.
In the conversation that I had with her, which ran about an hour, she mentioned somebody by the name of Lying Schultz or Schultz Lying or something like that. And I said, please, do not mention that name on Tom's show because he will lose control and forget what we're talking about. It will have a show about Ms. Schultz because we talk about her a lot. And I thought the girl was going to fall off her chair laughing.
Yeah, well, since we don't have a guest on Monday, maybe we will do a little segment on Debbie What's-Her-Next-Lai Schultz. And so Paul and I will do a little research and come up with whatever she has been talking about in the last couple weeks, because we know that if we just go back and find anything, any statements she's put out as DNC chair in the last 2 weeks, we will have a stack of lies. So that's just how she operates. So we'll plan on doing that. I'll tell you what, we're getting close to the end of the hour here. We're going to wrap it up now, I think, unless anybody's got anything else.
Let me stick something in before you go, Tom.
Sure. Sure.
Sid Prescott, one of our past guests on the show, sent a letter to Dr., I believe it's Savara, S-V-A-R-A, who co-authored Breaking New Ground, promoting environmental and energy progress in local governments. And Mr. Prescott tore this man a new ear or whatever. He said, "I wish to take issue with you, sir, in regard to ethics. Nowhere in your 49-page report did you mention that the concept of sustainability is based upon the United States Global Action Plan, Agenda 21, Sustainable Development, the Agenda for the 21st Century, a Blueprint for Global Sustainable Development into the 21st Century. You are unethical." I mean, it's like a nice, long, full-page letter, and Sid did a terrific job of writing to him.
Is there some place that's posted that people can go on the web to read?
I don't know if it is. I will send it to you.
Okay, email it to me. We'll get it up on one of our web pages. I'll link to it. We'll put it. Actually, here's what we're going to do. We're going to put a link to it on Facebook. I'll post it on the web. And then everybody out there, the American Hour on Twitter. If you don't have a Twitter account, get a Twitter account. Okay, I put out all kinds of tweets almost daily about news information, editorials, factual information that's really quite important, and I do a lot of research to make sure I'm not sending you something generally, sending you something that is, you know, not factual, not based on quality reporting and editorial research, so that you can be better informed. Things you're not going to see on Fox, even on their website, and so you can get a good, fast dose of information and news just by going through my tweets in just a 15-minute time, 5 minutes, whatever you want to do. So go to the American Hour on Twitter and follow us, and you're going to find out a lot of information finding out in the mainstream media. Please do that, and then we will tweet that out as well as we'll put it on Facebook. And if you go to Facebook, you know, you don't have to be you got to have a membership, I think, to go into Facebook. But once you do, you can go to the American Hour radio show, and we post all the information there about upcoming guests, past guests. I put some voice stuff on there where I go on and actually tell you about, like, for example, I'm going to go on there tomorrow in Brazil when I get there and do a little voiceover for this show today, talking about Margie Padgett and what a great show this was today, and how people need to go download it or stream it and listen to it. So, folks out there, the American Hour radio show on Facebook, and if you go there, click the like button, please. We've really got to get more people to do that. I can see how many people come on a daily basis and look at that page, and it's way more than have clicked the like button. And it's not because they don't like it. It's just they don't think about it. They don't notice it. So we really want to promote that. And then, of course, on Twitter, it's a great way to find out what we're going to be talking about on upcoming shows and what's going on a daily basis. So please go follow that. All right.
Okay.
That's awesome. We're looking forward to that show on the 21st. That'll be fun, and we'll get that posted from Sid Prescott, his letter. And Paula, any last comment before we close?
Shout out to our troops serving overseas, specifically to my godson's father, Daniel Messier, who is MM2 at the United States Navy, who just got married on Saturday to his sweetheart, Hillary. They're on their honeymoon this week. As well as shout out to Jenny Marie Ramos, who went to Hawaii to visit her man in the service, and they up and got married as well. So congratulations to both of you. And your families love and miss all of you that are serving our country and fighting for our freedoms and our liberties.
Awesome. Well, so true, so true. All right, thanks, Paula. We appreciate that. And, of course, we love the Navy and anybody fighting for us and working for us in the Navy. Not to say we don't love the other services, but the Navy is definitely the best. I hate to say it, but it is. And in sports, they definitely are the best. They've really been kicking Army's butt the last few years.
Be nice, sir.
So anyway, all right, thanks, everybody. We will see you again on Monday. We'll talk about current events. And Debbie's What's Her Next Lie Schultz will tell you what her next lie is probably going to be and what it's been in the last 2 weeks. Take care.
Sounds
Dick. Thanks for joining us today. We'll see you again soon. And thanks, Paula. We'll be broadcasting again Monday at 7 p.m. Everybody, take care.
Good night, everybody.
You're listening to the American Hour with Commander Tom Garcia on the USA Talk Radio Network.